All right, thank you. And I want to thank Dr. Lucia for inviting me and for you for attending this symposium. Here we got your disclosures. And I want to talk in this 20 minutes on a brief snapshot of the type of patients I see every day. My intention was actually bring all this very nice and scientific discussion into the practical ground. So the main part of this speech is going to be talking about a practical case. So let's start. What is the context where I usually develop my work and where I actually gain experience on treating patients with iron deficiency and heart failure? This is briefly, this is the map of Barcelona, and I come from Barcelona, obviously. And we have a specific model for heart failure patients that's been developed in, for our healthcare system. And it's basically for those high-risk patients, the heart failure programs have been built up from two sites, the primary care site, which is in our case are 14 primary care centers that are integrated in for specialized care, but also the, I would say the usual outpatient clinic for heart failure patients. And coordination is done by nurses. This is a multidisciplinary heart failure program integrated with primary care, and we have many, many of the, I would say, the typical elements that make a program work. So basically, and now we, I want to highlight this, the work for nurses and coordination with primary care teams in these patients that are getting old and old and old. So this is the context. Obviously, beside you have a very, very high-tech heart failure clinic, maybe transplantation, telemedicine, but at the same side, you have a patient that's old and maybe has dependent and needs home-based care. So this complexity of patient, I mean that, honestly, the goal in patients when we treat them now, at least for a part of the patients moving up to the new goal of improving quality of life. Obviously, these young patients, we want to just stress the benefits on therapies about prognosis, but obviously these 81-year-old patients, for example, being managed in at home-based care, need to think about improved symptoms. So that's why a few years ago we started to try to develop a very practical protocol for evaluation of anemia and iron deficiency. This is the snapshot how we usually work. We usually, in all patients, you know, I remember you, they are very high-risk patients, evaluate iron status and anemia on these patients, and in some cases we decide to correct this. We have changed the point where we decided to do so, and basically from the results we had from the FHF study. And after the correction phase, we just keep on going and checking how blood is in terms of iron and anemia. This is a brief snapshot about the inclusion criteria in our heart failure program. Basically, symptomatic patients with CHF, we don't have a specific cutoff point for left ventricular ejection fraction. More or less 40% of our patients have preserved chronic heart failure. We usually manage patients that have been previously admitted, and because part of the patients have CRASS syndrome, we use sometimes erythropoietin, so really exclude patients with active cancer and patients that can come along to the visit, to the visits. This is the criteria we use. To be honest, the more practical way to measure it is using the KDOQI definition of ferritin less than 100 or reduced TSAT, providing it's not higher than 700. And we use this formula for calculation. But I must tell you that gaining experience of giving IV iron has made us to use more sort of rule of thumb of 1,000 milligrams when we detect patients with iron deficiency. I'm not going to go on detail on this scheme, and it's also a summary of the flow we do. We usually evaluate all patients for iron deficiency and anemia. We assess, you know, clinical history, everything. If the patient is iron deficient, we may consider, providing they have this inclusion criteria, treat patients with intravenous iron, either with ferric carboxymaltose maltose or Venofer. And after 8 weeks, we check if we really made the goals. In very few cases, still symptomatic, still re-emitters, and with CRASS, we may decide to add erythropoietin. But more or less, this is the practical scheme. So in order to have enough time, and because I want really to discuss this case, let's start, and I will present this old lady that was referred to a heart failure clinic. This is a real case. So first of all, it's a 73-year-old woman. She's actually independent in, for daily activities, can come along to our, the hospital, which is our outpatient clinic for the heart failure program. And this is the treatment that was on. It was treated with carvedilol, enalapril, spironolactone, because she was very symptomatic, I'll show you afterwards. It was very hard to uptitrate the drugs because she was usually pretty hypotensive. Initially, in the course where she was referred, there was an improvement on functional class, but then patients started to have new admissions, more worsening heart failure, and actually that's why we planned, because we were on class 3 patient, and because she was having a left bundle branch block and was on sinus rhythm, we really planned to have a CRT and ICD implanted. And unfortunately, the procedure was unsuccessful. We had problems. We have actually a coronary sinus dissection. So the patient fainted the procedure with an ICD, and she said that she wouldn't never again heard about CRT. So we had this patient, was a true patient, so it sometimes happens. And that was actually anemic and with very low ejection fraction in normal coronary anatomy. So after discharge, after this planned admission for CRT, failed CRT, I would say, the patient was on class 3 and had a couple of episodes that were managed in our day hospital without admission, giving intravenous diuretics. So this is the measures we have from this patient, very hypotensive, no way of increasing again carvedilol or whatever, so she's kept stable in the treatment. So this is more or less the summary of the patient. It's a class 3 patient, maybe class 3 to 4, with previous readmission, several numbers of worsening heart failure episodes, severe systolic dysfunction, not suitable for transplantation, at least in my country because of the age, and anemia and complications from procedure. So the first question comes here, and having said more or less the criteria we use, in your opinion, does the patient comply with the inclusion criteria for evaluation and management of iron deficiency? In other words, would you actually consider to treat this patient, and which of these criteria actually would really help you to take this decision? So please vote. All right, so yes, most of you said the right answer. I would say probably, I mean, you may decide that not being a patient for the hospital is not a criteria for not giving IV iron. In Switzerland, the general practitioner is using intravenous iron, so you can be giving this at home. But obviously, the fact is symptomatic, you really may consider that this is a good choice to start the evaluation, at least the treatment. All right, so let's move. Next question is, what analytical parameters do you think are essential to evaluate this patient? You know, this patient's got low hemoglobin levels, and here you have several options, serum ferritin, HBNT-SAT, or serum ferritin, total iron binding capacity in serum iron, red blood cell, serum porphyrin, and hemoglobin reticulohead content, and the last question, the last option, ferritin and TSAT and total iron binding capacity. So please vote your desired option. Yeah, most of you are right. I make it simple. Just an HB, just ferritin, get TSAT, and then you can decide. You can decide whether or not this patient is functionally or absolute iron deficient, whether or not it's got patient anemia, and more important, if you are planning to give intravenous iron, you may monitor ferritin levels for safety concerns, etc. Okay, so you're doing very well. So next question is that this patient had this analysis done, and before starting treatment, we had this data. And the HP was around 11.9, so basically was nearly non-anemic. Serum ferritin was 10, transferrin was 323, TSAT 11%, and we have several more parameters that we discussed before. Soluble receptor or transferrin was a bit raised, serum iron, this hemoglobin, the reticulocyte, etc. But anyway, with the data, especially the first four parameters, would you please tell me if you think this patient is just iron deficient, anemic, iron deficiency and anemia on either of these options? Please vote. Yes, yes, I agree. Most of you said that this patient has got first iron deficiency and anemia, which is the stage that's beyond iron deficiency, right? Okay, so move to the next stage in this patient. Yeah, you now have actually reckoned that this patient's got anemia and iron deficiency, but the question was, is this patient absolute iron deficient or functional? Please vote. Well, this is a very well-trained audience. Actually, most of you have realized this patient is absolute iron deficient. Really, if we have a look to the parameters and the definitions, we were talking before about the conditions that really make the difference between absolute and functional. I'm not going to get in detail. But very important, when we look to the parameters of this patient, this very low ferritin in a patient with a chronic condition, probably with a component of inflammation, it really makes that probably has not iron at all in the bone marrow. So in this case, obviously, the motivation in our program is to refer this patient to a gastroenterologist and search for GI bleeding, for example, or maybe talk to the primary care doctor and try to coordinate this type of studies. So basically, from these parameters, you're going to get some information. Most of them, if you go through them, are talking about inadequate transport, inadequate hemoglobin synthesis, or what we call iron-restricted erythropoiesis, which is a sort of summary of processes leading to not enough iron is incorporated into red cells. So how to calculate the deficit? We used to use the Ganzoni formula, and I think it's a good exercise for you when you start to treat patients with iron to use it. And this is, this formula, taking, the desired HB and the actual HB. And in this case, the patient was 66 kilogram, and the HB makes rounding more or less 1,000 milligram. That's why, to be honest, in the last month, when we want to correct iron deficiency, we really go to the rule of thumb of giving 1,000 milligrams and not using the Ganzoni formula. But to be academically correct, the formula is useful. Right, so now is the big question. Now you've got a patient, iron deficient, anemic, symptomatic. You know the theory now, but what iron therapy would you give to this patient? Known, oral iron, intravenous iron, erythropoietin, and iron. Please vote. Yes, I mean, this is from my point of view, is the right answer. And now I'm going to tell you a secret.
Maybe, Richard, we can just have a question. Why not EPO and iron? We heard that they actually act at different stages of erythropoiesis.
I think EPO at this stage, with a very depleted patient in terms of iron, it really makes more functional iron deficient probably. So, to be honest, I really first replete iron as soon as I suspect the patient is iron deficient, at least absolute iron deficient. He's a patient, and actually it's the last question of the slides, why not to use erythropoietin? But this patient has not anomal renal function in terms of estimated GFR. So from the
Yeah, 44, right?
Yeah.
But in renal patients, that's more common, isn't it?
Sure, but that's also, but a lot of these patients respond to intravenous iodine.
But
just to clarify,
obviously, we want to ask this question when we finish correction. Okay. Then we really think about. And you said intravenous iron, and I must tell you that this patient actually was trying oral iron for a few months ago, and she actually didn't improve anemia. So in this case, it was a trick. I didn't tell you this information, but it was right. And obviously, the gastrointestinal tract was studied in this patient. All right, so you give intravenous iron. How to prepare it? That you're going to have the nurse in the maybe the hospital and the clinic going to say, well, I have this iron preparation here. How am I going to dilute it? How am I going to give it? And how I, you know, work it out. And for information, if you use ferric carboxymal dose, usually we have type of ampoules, the 2 milligrams, which is 100 milligrams, and the, also the one with 500 milligrams of iron. So if you use iron sucrose, usually use an ampoule that's got 5 mils, so you've got 100 milligrams per ampoule. And the patient's got 1,000 milligrams that you're going to be given. And in the case you use iron sucrose, you really need to give it in several sessions because you cannot give more than 200 milligrams per session. And we usually, in our protocol, we do it weekly. We could do it maybe every 2 days, but in an ambulatory basis, we use it weekly. And we dilute it in normal saline in 100, 200 mils and give it in maybe 1 hour, maybe 90 minutes, if you need 200. Ferric carboxymal dose, we usually dilute it in also in normal saline. And unless, although it can be given in 15 to 20 minutes, we usually give it 60 minutes because giving 200 mils in a patient with low ejection fraction, maybe very symptomatic, we really just decided to give it in 1 hour. Probably it doesn't make the difference, but we do. All right. So after 4 weeks, you got the patient. In this patient, we actually gave ferric carboxymal dose. And for weeks, the HB is about 12.3. Ferritin is still the same. But TSAT now is 19%. All right. So it's 3 weeks after giving iron. And next question, what should be the next step for the patient's management strategy? And here you got the answers: schedule an increase on iron therapy, decrease in iron therapy, complete analytical assessment, or schedule an assessment of erythropoietin needs. Please vote. Right. There are divergence of opinions here. Increasing iron therapy, and I would say, yes, the three is right, because it's just 4 weeks after you gave the treatment. So if you are using iron sucrose, probably you're still giving iron sucrose. You haven't finished your plan, probably, if you're giving once a week. If you just use ferric carboxymal dose, you probably need to wait for maybe 4 weeks more to see an effect on symptoms and maybe changes in the hematological indexes. So in my case, in our protocol, we actually advise to have a full evaluation. The 4 week analysis is for a safety measure we have. Basically, when we use erythropoietin, it's not the case, but to check the THP is increasingly very high. So we keep doing the same controls in patients giving receiving intravenous iron. And in this case, actually, we assess, complete analysis in 4 weeks more. So after 4 weeks, the patient comes along, look the HB, 13.7, 7 ferritin is 87, transferrin is normal, TSAT is much better, but it's still not normal. And you got very important questions that we actually asked before is now the time to give sort of maintenance dose of iron? Yes or not? It's been treated 8 weeks before. The patient's got TSAT of 28% and serum ferritin 87. Please vote. How many of you will actually give a booster dose? Please vote. Mm-hmm. most of you, and the right answer is, well, according to our protocol, at least we will give, and I must agree that maybe you, your protocols is different, but in our case, we will do it. And next question is, would you consider now erythropoieting this patient? I say now because this patient was really deeply iron deficient, and I wouldn't really advise to start with EPO in this stage. But now the patient is more or less more replete, and the question is, shall I add erythropoietin to the treatment? Yes or not? Please vote. Well, so the right answer in my case was no, because in our protocol we already state that this patient should be probably a CRAS patient, is not, and it's not that symptomatic, I'll show you now. And from the HP point of view, I mean, really the benefit would be really, you know, low and the risk high. And actually, just a snapshot to finish this case. This patient really improved a lot. I mean, she was a patient, despite it was a chronic heart failure with low ejection fraction, very symptomatic patient with iron deficiency anemia, and you corrected this iron deficiency. So she was on class 3 and then it was on class 1, and it was a striking change in just 2 months, to be honest. There were no new decompensation episodes. Look, the parameters really improved. You saw it before. And there was an improvement in proBNP, but also the baseline proBNP was obtained during the last admission, so it's a bit tricky. And renal function was actually improved. Well, we weren't describing this. So there was an improving situation after treating this patient. So to conclude, optimization iron therapy requires first this, I would say, multidisciplinary and holistic approach. And I think it's very useful to have specific protocols to decide which patients should be evaluated for iron deficiency and how should be the treatment in my institution. And in our case, in our experience, as you know, when we correct anemia and iron deficiency anemia, symptoms of patients really improve, and quality of life, at least from our point of view, is very important as an efficacy endpoint, at least for patients. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. That was very useful. Any questions from the audience to this case? Yes, please, Dr. Bernardo.
Having the patient always euvolemic, do you have cases where they stay hypovolemic and you start the iron IV therapy too or not?
Hypovolemic?
No, hyper.
Hyper.
Yeah, because it's so difficult to bring the fluid out.
In our experience, in ambulatory patients, we usually have many of them really reach to have them euvolemic. That's why we can titrate beta blockers and whatever. Yeah. For admitted patients, to be honest, I'd really prefer to have them euvolemic. Yeah. Because obviously, if you use specifically, as an example, iron sucrose, you're going to be giving normal saline every now and then, and it worries me. But in some cases, we just treated even hypervolemic patients using pericarboxymal doses. The amount of volume you give is not that much. But, okay. Yeah, probably I'll try to move.
Okay, then other questions, please. Yes, in the back.
After some injections, it's wise to look for the B12, vitamin B12. You have experience.
Should we measure with vitamin B12?
Because B12 can go down.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, we usually check B12 and folate when we do the workup. And obviously, we have detected not many, but some anemias due to B12 deficiency. But obviously, if you have a very nice and big burst of reticulocytes, you may have increased risk of being depleted from B12. But this is not our case. Actually, the patients we've been analyzing, they really have most of them normal to high levels of B12. Obviously, maybe providing you create more erythrocytic mass, one of the risks should be having a B12 evaluated. We do it, and we haven't found specific problems about this.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, there, over there.
Should be iron transfusion done in hospital or can it be done at home?
Can we do this treatment on an outpatient basis, or do we have to hospitalize them?
We usually do it in outpatient basis. We have a day hospital, like oncologists have, with an armchair. You sit the patient, you give the line, you give the iron. If it is ferricarboxamators, may give 500, maybe 1,000 milligram, and then have the infusion and go home. I mean, we've been giving, like nephrologists do, thousands of treatments, and we no problem at all. And during the admission, I must confess now, after the French trial, we actually moved to start to treat iron deficiency a bit earlier. We used to wait for patients being still symptomatic, still uptitrated, and now the patient's not improving, then I treat it. But now, the first admission, we detect iron deficiency, we give ferric carboxymaltose, and then we forget about the problem until the next control. So I must admit that we have shifted a little bit.
All right. Other questions? Well, if not, thank you very much indeed. With this closes this symposium.